conversation between Milad and Yesterday, text number 6. Actually, today will be text number 6. Role in stages of progress of a devotee from the beginning of devotional service right through to Krishna prema. So here, of course, we are discussing the beginning of devotional service as exemplified in the life of Radha Muni. But we will see later that we see also the final steps of Radha Muni's life when he attains Krishna prema. This today, of course, the disappearance of Jai Dev Goswami. He is also another great Vaishnava who is on the platform of Prema Bhakti. And it describes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that in the Adi Lila, chapter 13, text number 42, it describes that Lord Chaitanya used to read the books of Vidyapati, Jayadev, and Chandidas, relishing their songs with his confidential associates like Sri Ramananda Roya and Swarup Damodara Goswami. So, we also know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also liked to read, especially amongst the confidential devotees, certain Srimad Bhagavatam, and even the 10th canto and the elevated parts of the 10th canto dealing with the Rasa Lila. He liked to also discuss the Jagannath Bhagavad Nataka, I think it's called, by Ramananda Raya, and also the Brahma Samhita, and also Lopa Mangala Pakor's Krishna Paramrita. These books in particular, and these and sections of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Rasa Lila, he discussed only in the company of personalities like Swarup Damodara, Ramananda Roya. Actually, Prabhupada mentions in one of his lectures that he didn't even discuss these books with the Goswamis of Vrindavan. Just to show you how strict Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, and of course how elevated these topics are, and how elevated one must be to discuss certain aspects of our Vaishnava philosophy. The Vaishnava philosophy, there are aspects which are there to understand at the very beginning, and there are aspects of the Vaishnava philosophy for all different levels of devotees, and there are aspects reserved for very elevated devotees. Not that every devotee has the right to discuss willy-nilly any aspect of Vaishnava philosophy. So these personalities such as Vidyapati and Chandidas, they appeared somewhere around about 100 years before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whereas Jayadev Goswami was about 200 or 300 years prior to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he resided in Navadvipa, and then later he spent the last part of his life in Orissa, and later at the end of this lecture, if you don't all walk out, we'll actually hear the pastime from the Prakavinoda Pakor's Navadvipa Mahatma, where Jiva Goswami is travelling with Lord Nityananda through Navadvipa, and Lord Nityananda tells the story of Jayadev So, but you know, there are very important aspects of this life with Narada Muni, today's particular lessons, which is connected to this whole discussion of, you know, what is appropriate and the right attitude for devotees at any stage of devotional service, and what is appropriate in the beginning, and what is appropriate towards more advanced stages. So, we will come back into this example of Radha Muni. So let's lead into that. Now, these songs of personalities like Jai Dev, now, most of you are familiar with probably the prayers of Dasavatar Sutra, we sing daily. So all the other, you know, the Dasavatar Sutra, including that prayer that we're on the Shunga Day, that is one of the prayers of Jaya Deva Goswami. And also in Orissa, Jagannath Puri, many of his prayers are recited daily, you know, in the Jagannath Temple, including Sri Dikamana, which is elevated topics. Even that song, Shri Kamala, Prabhupada actually warns devotees in general that it's not appropriate for them. You know, and you know, if you read it, of course, we might read that later on, but just, you know, there's just a few verses just touching on the rasa lila pastimes, but even, you know, Prabhupada cautions, you know, it's not. And I know that many times amongst the congregation, when doing different home programs, that it is a tradition that they sing that prayer because it is, you know, sung in Orissa in different parts. Although you can see that they really have no understanding of its meaning or its significance, you know, it's like that. But so these songs, they. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, these songs express, and books by these elevated personalities, they express the feelings of separation from Krishna. In the mood of the gopis' love for Krishna. Those feelings were actually felt by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He used to read those books in the association of very confidential devotees, just a few, and he would experience those feelings after meditating upon those verses and those pastimes. So personalities like Ramananda Raya and Sri Damodara would assist in that. And of course, you know, they're very, very elevated persons. We know that Sri Damodara Goswami is actually none other than Lita Shahi, confidential associate of Srimati Radharani, and Ramananda Rai is said to be Vishaka, and also he is understood to be Arjuna. So, but you know, these songs and books and literatures that express very advanced concepts which are only understood by those on very elevated status of spiritual consciousness. Otherwise, it's not possible to understand. They're not for persons who lack God consciousness, or to speak of lack a certain level of God consciousness. Even if such persons are highly elevated in literate persons, sometimes you'll meet persons and they can speak very, very eloquently, practically without fault, and they use a lot of big words, which you don't understand. And they know a lot of things, and yet they have no access whatsoever if they don't have the proper spiritual consciousness. They cannot understand that literary accomplishment is not a qualification at all. One short while I was talking with one Sanskrit scholar in India, Indian gentleman, and he was saying that one of these books should have come up in the conversation, and this gentleman said, "Oh yes, I have read that, and it's especially nice in Sanskrit." And if you're a Sanskrit scholar, you get something more. The Prabhupada said, "No, that makes no difference. Any language is not dependent on your Sanskrit scholarship. You can read the same book in English." And even if that book is presented with fault, you actually derive more benefit according to your spiritual consciousness, not according to your Sanskrit scholarship. Therefore, we're also very careful that just because someone's a Sanskrit scholar in Islam, still doesn't mean they're qualified to translate and proliferate some of these elevated literatures. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he's explaining all these different points that, when mundane people, or sometimes even devotees who have a lot of mundane qualities still, when they, review these books and discuss these books, they simply help people in general to become debauchees. That's the net result. They don't become elevated in Krishna consciousness, they become more of a debauchee. And of course that leads to social scandals and atheism. It actually reduces a person's faith in the Supreme Lord rather than increase it. Because they misunderstand the pastimes of Krishna's Rasa Lila as those of ordinary boys and girls. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur specifically warns that those in bodily consciousness, and according to the degree of the bodily consciousness, they're more and more forbidden to actually indulge in discussing such literatures. Actually, once Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he asked his father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if he could publish, I think it was Gita Govinda, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur showed no interest in it. And after asking him, on different occasions, he said, "All right, you can publish one copy, read it, that's it. Here, one copy, you read it, finish. It's not for, anyone else." Okay. Yeah, very, very, very strict. Of course, we know, most of these books you can just go to the bookshop and buy them. And as I pointed out before, no harm in buying them, because the hope is that one day we will be qualified to read them. And but just because you bought a book doesn't mean that you are qualified. Just because you have the money to buy a book is not a qualification that I am qualified to read it. But, it's not that in ISKCON we don't discuss these literatures. It's actually part of our philosophy. It's part of our heritage. It's actually for us. If we don't read them, who else will? It's actually for ISKCON. It's actually meant for us to become qualified so ultimately we can relish these books. And that, therefore, Lord Chaitanya showed that example, that he relished these books. But very, very carefully, very carefully. So we see, there are different quotes from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Leela, chapter 9, text number 384, that describes how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to the bank of the Krishnavena River, where he visited many holy places and temples of various gods. And the next verse describes that the Brahmana community there was composed of pure devotees who regularly studied a book entitled Krishnakandarita, which was composed by the Guru Mahaprabhu Thakur. The next verse it describes Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased to hear the book Krishnakandarita, and with great eagerness he had it copied and took it with him. There is no comparison to Krishnakandarita within the three worlds. By studying this book, one is elevated to the knowledge of pure devotional service to Krishna. One who constantly reads Krishnakandarita can fully understand the beauty and melodious taste of the pastimes of Lord Krishna. So, they're meant to be studied, and when they are studied, it elevates one to the highest levels of understanding of Krishna consciousness. But they can only be studied when devotees become qualified. And we see also in Anchalila, chapter 20, verses 67 to 68, and 69, says that when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu read the verses of Jaya Devi's Gita Govinda, of Srimad Bhagavatam, Ramananda Goswami's Gama, Jagannath Balabhanatika, Bilbamangala, of course, Krishnakandarita, he was overwhelmed by the various ecstatic emotions of those sweet verses, thus he tasted their purports. In this way they're meant to be read and studied because they actually elevate one to Krishna consciousness, but one can only read according to one's qualification. And generally, these books, which are meant for devotees practicing Raghunuga Bhakti and who are developing Bhava Bhakti stage of Bhakti, what is the symptom that one is qualified for Raghunuga Bhakti and Bhava Bhakti? There's no sex desire.
Reading these books, even Krishna book,
Because Srila Prabhupada presented Krishnable, and of course all the pastimes of Krishna are there. The difference is that if a devotee is reading in a, they're studying just consecutively the books, that's fine. You can read it, all the books, you read them consecutively. Where a devotee's got to be careful is if they start hovering around aspects of the philosophy that may be beyond them. You can read through them casually, that's not a problem. And you start to systematically take up that, study of the sections of the Srimad Bhagavatam, dealing with the gopis, and just hover around there, that's dangerous. But to read through them, especially with Prabhupada's purports, like read Krishna books. So Prabhupada presented a Krishna book, everyone can read it. We even handed that to people on the street. But that casual reading, that is fine. But we see that, for example, here's an example of how Prabhupada presents Krishna book in such a way that he's always pegging us back to the level we're on. This is from chapter 86 from the Krishna book. He actually discusses one of the prayers of Vidyapati. So Prabhupada quite often quoted Vidyapati, Chandidas, Philamangalakor, Jayadeva Goswami, but their literature, songs or books which were we qualified here. So this one here says, this is the prayers from the Sangha by Vedas. The devotee engaged by the direction of the spiritual master in the transcendental loving service of the Lord contemplates as follows. My dear Lord, you are the reservoir of pleasure. Since you are present, what is the use of the transient pleasure derived from society, friendship and love? Persons unaware of the supreme reservoir of pleasure falsely engage in deriving pleasure from sense gratification, but this is transient and illusory. Prabhupada then says, in this connection, Vidyapati, a great Vaishnava devotee and poet, says, my dear Lord, undoubtedly there is some pleasure in the midst of society, friendship and love. Although it is materially conceived, that such pleasure cannot satisfy my heart, which is like a desert. Unquote. In a desert there is need of an ocean of water, but if only a drop of water is poured in the desert, what is the value of such water? Similarly, our material hearts are full of multi-desires which cannot be fulfilled within the material society of friendship and love. When our hearts begin to derive pleasure from the supreme reservoir of pleasure, then we can be satisfied. That transcendental satisfaction is possible only in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness. So you see, Srila Prabhupada, right the way through Krishna book, he's always, reminding us to keep your feet firmly placed on the ground. Always remember there's no enjoyment in the material world. Enjoyment is from the spiritual platform in relationship to the Supreme Lord, the reservoir of all pleasure. Yes, there may be some happiness in the material world, but that little drop will not make you happy. It will only make you more miserable. So, in this way, we can read these books sometimes in a casual way, but be very, very careful. Openly discussing and hovering around these topics, elevated topics too much, or hearing them from others who are not qualified to speak them. Generally we read Jayadeva Goswami's works such as Dasavatara Sutra and whatever like that, and Srila Prabhupada gave many purports on Dasavatara Sutra. So we have to be on guard, because actually the nature of the materially conditioned mind is that we're always searching for sense gratification. That's the nature of our conditioning. We have unlimited desires for sense gratification. Very, very powerful, and that conditioning and that attraction to the material energy is very, very powerful. It's actually almost unlimited supply of material desires in the heart. And the mind is always looking how to, experience sense gratification in the material world. Now, one of the things that happens, which we're warned about, is that devotees take up the practice of Krishna consciousness and they follow the four regular principles. Now, this is sex, no sense gratification, no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication. What happens is that it can manifest as a subtle desire for sense gratification of proper adoration and distinction. So, although sometimes because the physical act of sense gratification is definitely restricted by the devotees following the principles, it can manifest in a subtle way of searching for profit from one's service. Ultimately, profit and these three things ultimately lead to the ability to have sense gratification. If we have profit, we have facility for sense gratification. Adoration. We want to be loved, especially by the opposite sex. And distinction. That amongst many, I am the best competitor to be awarded sense gratification. Right? Profit, adoration, distinction. It is very, very dangerous. What happens, of course, is that when we become infected by that proper adoration and distinction, sometimes we want to pose as elevated devotees, although we may not be on that platform. And we may discuss elevated transcendental topics that we may not be elevated, we should not be discussing, but sometimes when devotees appear to be speaking on very elevated aspects of Vaishnava philosophy, the natural tendency is to think, he's speaking on those elevated topics, he or she must be an elevated devotee, but that's not the case. Sometimes devotees may be suffering from proper adoration and distinction, and because of that, they therefore speak on elevated topics above their station. It doesn't necessarily mean they're on that platform and that they are necessarily qualified. Sometimes it's the fact that they're disqualified is why they're discussing those things. You see how tricky the material energy is. The worst thing is what you see on the internet. Now, the internet is the worst thing because you have practically an unlimited supply of unqualified persons discussing all sorts of elevated subject matters on Krishna consciousness, from Guru Tapa, the position of Paramahamsas, preaching and Vaidhi Bhakti, Raghunath Bhakti, deity worship, what is right and what is wrong. This is one should be very careful not to hear from such persons. As Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, the net result of hearing advanced topics of Krishna consciousness from unqualified persons is it actually causes you to fall down. It's very, very, very dangerous. Why? Because our mind is constantly, you know, thinking like this, that, you know, I'd like to have sense gratification, but I've got to surrender to Krishna. And that's holding me back. So the mind is always looking that if there's just a little loophole that I could somehow, you know, prove that I don't have to surrender to Krishna, I could just go straight back to sense gratification. Think about that. Because the mind, you know, like that. If I could somehow disprove Krishna is God, there is no God, or, you know, there is some fault, some significant fault, or what have you, that's enough that I can, you know. So, therefore, actually, you know, the symptom that we're the conditioned soul is many, many doubts, strong doubts. It's normal to have doubts because we're conditioned souls. It's not an abnormal thing. It's normal to have doubts. But we must understand that, you know, to have many doubts like that is a symptom of our conditioning. We shouldn't be alarmed. That's normal. Because we're not, you know, unless someone is, you know, the sense, you know, Paramahansa devotee, you know, fixed up devotees, they don't have doubts. For us, we have so many doubts. And you know, we think that, as we described, that why is, why am I denying myself? You know, why can I not go back to sense gratification? You know, that is the nature of the mind. So sometimes, if there is some aspect of the philosophy which appears to be unappealing or appears to be contradictory for many devotees, that is the catalyst to actually, you know, again go back to sense gratification, to actually give up devotional service. You know, there are hundreds and hundreds of devotees, you know, that they begin reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, and because, you know, they're not fully understanding what they're reading, even you know, Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, because if they don't hear from devotees who can dispel their doubts, you know, sometimes what they, if they're reading beyond their level of understanding, they can see contradictions, apparent contradictions in the philosophy. And for them, that's enough that, oh yes, yeah, what am I doing here? You know, I should, you know, go back to life, sense gratification. Actually, the fact is that even if there are some faults in the presentation of the Vaishnava philosophy, it's still to be accepted. I'll just read a quote again from in the Adi Lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu defeated the great Digvijaya, who was a great scholar. Now, it describes here, when the poetic champion was thus defeated, all the Lord's disciples sitting there began to laugh loudly. But the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked them not to do so, and he addressed the poet as follows: "You were the most learned scholar and the topmost of all great poets, for otherwise, how could such fine poetry come from your mouth? Your poetic skill is like that of a constant flow of the waters of the Ganges. I find no one in the world who can compete with you. Even in the poetic compositions of such great poets, such as Bhavabhuti, Jayadeva, and Kalidas, there are many examples of faults. Such mistakes should be considered negligible. One should only see how such poets have displayed the poetic power." So here, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying that in the works of persons like Jayadeva Goswami, there are many examples of faults. But he's saying that it should be considered negligible. In the purport, Prabhupada explains, in explaining the glories of the Lord, inexperienced men may compose poetry with many faults, but because it contains glorification of the Lord, great personalities read it. Hear it and chant it, despite its minute literary discrepancies. One must study poet on the merit of the subject matter. According to Vaishnava philosophy, any literature that glorifies the Lord, whether properly written or not, is first class. There need be no other considerations. You know, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when his disciples would write something on Krishna consciousness, he would look and he would see how many times the word Krishna is written, and he would say, "Oh, excellent." So, just because there are some faults, for instance, we know that many persons, often challenge Srila Prabhupada and challenge his followers because they, Srila Prabhupada was not always, exact in his presentation of the English language or his construction of his sentences. Sometimes he left it, when Prabhupada spoke, he generally spoke in terms of the major principles. The details, he tried to put more in his books. So sometimes people may, quote, something that Prabhupada said, and there's some little discrepancy, and they seize upon that little fault, as something very, very significant. And in doing that, they're prepared to reject everything Srila Prabhupada has said in all of his books to contradict that fault. And everything that has happened for thousands of years in the Vaishnava Sampradaya to contradict that little, literary fault. So, just because there are some, discrepancies in the presentation, or even, what have you, still, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's principle is that, the content, if it is proper, it's in the proper mood of pure devotional service, then those faults are not significant. And one should not try to derive a philosophy from those literary discrepancies. And actually, if you go to the internet, you'll see that most of the challenges, against ISKCON or ISKCON devotees or gurus or what have you, are based upon very minute, faults in sort of Prabhupada's language, and flies in the face of all his books and thousands of years of Vaishnava philosophy. But the content of their discussion is incorrect, and therefore should be neglected. Now, how do we understand that? So, the difference is that when Srila Prabhupada presented Krishna consciousness, even with his faults in his language and sometimes writing, his mood was pure, unmotivated, loving devotional service to Krishna, spotless. That was without fault. Therefore, we accept Srila Prabhupada like that. Someone else may be more literarily and grammatically expert than Srila Prabhupada. But if there's no motivation of pure devotional service, we don't accept anything they say. Why should we? Doesn't matter how wonderful they present it. And this is where, we see the example, what is the test? This is where this example of the Radha Muni comes in. That the example we see, we follow in the footsteps of the Radha Muni, just as Srila Prabhupada did. that whatever circumstances, good or bad, a devotee always tries to remain fixed as a humble servant, trying to love the Supreme Lord more and more purely. Good things happen, that doesn't change. Bad things happen, that doesn't change. But those who are motivated, quite often, their discussions are trying to confirm to the already conditioned mind, why are you serving Krishna? Why are you surrendering to Krishna? Why are you doing this devotional service? Like this. When that motivated type of discussion of Krishna consciousness is there, that is the difference. That should be neglected. Because the underlying fact is that whatever happens to us in this world, we always remain a spirit soul. Whatever circumstances we go through, that never changes. We always remain not this body. And the spirit soul, where does the spirit soul come from? The spirit soul is one of the a tiny particle of the Lord's spiritual energy. That doesn't change. The nature of the spirit, the fact that we're a spirit soul never changes. The fact that we are the spirit soul is a part of the Supreme Lord's spiritual energy, that never changes. It doesn't matter whether good or bad things are happening, that hasn't changed. It doesn't matter what philosophy we're discussing, that doesn't change. You can discuss philosophy till the cows come home, but it will not change the fact that you're not this body of the spirit soul. And the fact that we are part of the Supreme Lord's spiritual energy means that we have an eternal, intimate relationship with the Supreme Lord as the subordinate energy of the Lord meant for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That doesn't change either. These are eternal facts that no matter what happens and no matter what anyone says, that doesn't change. And therefore you see here with Narada Muni, he's the only son of his mother. His mother's completely dependent upon him, and thinking he'll grow up, he'll look after me, and at the same time trying to look after him. She goes out, he's 5 years old, his mother gets bitten by a snake and dies. He's left on his own. Now already he's heard, these discussions from the Bhaktivedantas. He's heard the philosophy that you're a spirit soul, little boy, little Dasikulcha. You're a spirit soul. You're part of the spiritual energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You're meant to serve him. That's your eternal position. So Narada Muni, he's 5 years old, all alone in the world. He doesn't have a job, he doesn't have a mother, sometimes you see devotees come, oh, I've lost my job, put yourself in the right movies position, you've got nothing, I don't know whether he's even got shoes, we don't know. He's basically just got to, head out in the big world by himself. But his mind didn't say, this proves, that there can't be a God. Bad things happen. How can bad things happen? A Jewish God doesn't exist. Or, I've been, serving these nice, saintly persons, and, God is not very kind to me. Why should I surrender unto him? So many different things. No. He just, the fact remains the same. I'm a spirit soul. I may be a 5-year-old boy alone in this world, but I'm still a spirit soul. I'm still part of the spiritual energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead and I have an eternal intimate relationship, and happiness is derived when I return back to that position. I have no other choice but to see that Supreme Lord, who we are affectionately related together with eternally, must be helping me. God's position doesn't change. Neither my position changes, nor does God's position. Just because someone espouses some bogus philosophy, does that mean God has changed? You know, people actually think like that, that God is sort of something that according to what we imagine God to be, then he changes like that. You know, people think, well, you have your conception of God, so God is like that for you. And God changes according, I have my conception, so he's different for me. And, you know, you have your conception, so he's different for you. And then if your circumstances change, you may even change your conception. So God is just, actually that's not a fact. God, his position always remains eternal as well. Our position remains eternal, his position remains eternal. So those things don't change. So it is that devotee of that mentality that we hear philosophy from. That's who you actually hear the Krishna consciousness from. Even that devotee may have so many faults, in fact. And their presentation may be faulty. But if that principle is there, that devotee remains fixed in devotional service and is always just fixed in that position. I'm a spirit soul. I'm not this body. And my ultimate happiness will be there in, you know, gradually developing that intimate relationship with the Lord, who is the reservoir of all pleasure. Okay. God is love, as I said. Srila Prabhupada used to say that he'd say even about himself in humility, but he was giving us the understanding. He said, I may not be a pure devotee. You may not be a pure devotee. But if we continue to act under the pure devotee, we become as good as pure devotees. So even if you're not a pure devotee, and therefore actually within tattva, actually even a guru who's not a liberated soul can actually become a guru. As long as they remain acting under the guidance and the instructions of the guru, they're considered to be as good as a pure devotee. But as soon as one, you know, is not situated properly under the guidance of a pure devotee, then the position is different. But it's this point that, you know, if a devotee is just fixed in that consciousness, you know, the basic, I'm not this body, they're not looking for some motivation to again engage in sense gratification. You know, if you talk to them, they will actually help you to remove your doubts and expose the foolishness of your mind. You know, if the mind is saying, oh, let me give up devotional service and find pleasure in the material world, maybe I am this body, you need to listen to a devotee who knows they're not this body, you know, who's fixed in that concept. And, we also see that this brings, so, you know, in essence, Narada Muni is displaying that he's not just motivated by material desires, because in essence, his desires, any desires that he may have had for material enjoyment, have just been smashed to pieces. Right? But he's going to push forward regardless, but also he's not envious of God. It describes in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 7th chapter, that we're born into this world overcome by desire and hatred, or, you know, this envy of God. So, again, that I'm suffering, you know, they become envious. You know, I've not suffered at your hands. What should I say to unto you? You enjoy what I suffered? You know, that's the envious mentality. So either they try to prove that God is faulty, he's lusty himself, he's mundane, and therefore I'm just as good as him. And therefore I'll engage in sense gratification, God's engaging in sense gratification. What's the difference? Or they try to prove that he is faulty, or they try and elevate themselves to the position that, yes, I am just as good as God at that. So, but actually we see that in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Shastika, Sri Krishna is my Lord, and he shall remain so, even if he handles me roughly by his embrace, or breaks my heart by not being present before me. He's completely free to do anything and everything. But he always remains my Lord unconditionally, no conditions. Lack of envy means abundance of love. According to our abundance of love, we have a lack of envy. To the degree of envy, our love is crippled. That verse in Shishastika describes no envy. Radha Muni is not angry with God. He's not angry with God, he's not angry with Guru, he's not angry with the Vaishnava, he's not angry. He's just, understands that nothing has changed. I'm still a spirit soul, I'm not this body. I am part of the spiritual energy of the Lord, intimately connected with the Supreme Lord eternally, and happiness lies on developing that eternal loving relationship. So, therefore, we should always remember that God is very, very merciful, and therefore, He appears as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance is particularly significant because actually none of us are qualified to do any service. Hands up those who are qualified to serve Radha Krishna. And yet we're all doing that. And hands up those qualified to worship the deities of Radha Krishna. Those qualified to perform yogis. Amen. I do them. I never say I was qualified. Who is qualified to speak from my Bhagavatam? Actually, it is Chaitanya. Who is qualified to do anything? It is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, yes, I give him unlimited mercy. You come forward and you worship Radha Krishna to your heart's content. You go back to Godhead. That doesn't mean we're qualified. We accept that mercy and we think it's so merciful. Now let me become qualified day by day. And therefore, always humble. Janata Pisa Nichanata Roda Vyasishna Amana Manadina Kirtaniya Sadhani. That's the one condition. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, you always remain humble. And then you can always, appreciate the mercy of the Supreme Lord, and you'll be constantly enthused to chant Hare Krishna. Remain humble, chant Hare Krishna, accept that mercy. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very kind and very loving, and given the highest possible attainment of worshipping Radha Krishna and the opportunity to go back to Goloka Vrindavan to, people in Kali Yuga. I know that Ramai Swami, he says to me sometimes when he says, Gandhi, I never ever thought you'd be devoted. Because basically you just pick me up the street. He said, I never ever thought you'd be devoted. He's always surprised when he sees me, and I'm surprised. But we should always, it's a pleasant surprise.
Actually, Prabhupada said that we should not be surprised who goes, but we should be surprised who stays. That's a fact. So, if we remain humble devotees and, appreciate that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is unlimitedly merciful and loving to us, that is a proper mood. And then whatever the Supreme Lord arranges for us in our life, we try to accept. And if there are difficulties, we should discuss with qualified devotees. It doesn't mean, qualified devotees does not necessarily mean big devotees. It means even your average garden variety devotee. No, it's a fact. As long as they're just always fixed in that understanding. Yes, I'm always trying to remember I'm not this body. Yeah, talk to him. I'm a spirit soul. Yes, talk to him. Her. I'm part of the spiritual energy of the Supreme Lord, and we have an eternal intimate relationship, and that Lord is allowing me to serve Radha Krishna and go back to Godhead. Talk to that devotee. If you're talking to someone and they're saying, what are you doing here serving Krishna like this, go out and enjoy the body, like this, give up, surrender, what's going on here, you're talking to the wrong person. No matter how sophisticated that philosophy, and no matter how elevated that person may be. So, on that point, we want to, as Prabhupada would say, that, you follow Narada Muni, not farcical Narada. Sometimes Prabhupada would see devotees do plays and someone would act like Narada Muni. And Prabhupada would sometimes, laugh in a sort of a, humorous way, farcical Narada. Don't follow the farcical Narada, follow this Narada Muni. Whatever happens to us, you just remain fixed in this basic level of understanding. And if you can't understand that level of, I'm not this body, I'm a spirit soul, don't try to understand other aspects of the philosophy, jump up into that, and don't listen to others who are also, not convinced that they're not this body, who are discussing those philosophies. So we're going to hear a little bit from Jayadev Goswami's pastimes, and we will see the reciprocation between the Supreme Lord and his devotees when they reciprocate with him in love. How merciful, how much nectar there is. So this is from chapter 11, I think, of the Sri Navadvipa Mahatma by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Nityananda Prabhu, so there's no batteries? You can all hear? Nityananda Prabhu then came to Champahatta and the party took rest at... Oh, thank you. Nityananda Prabhu then came to Champahatta and the party took rest at Vainath's house. So Nityananda Prabhu is going through Navadvipdham giving Jivika Swami a tour. In the afternoon, as they toured Champahatta, Nityananda Prabhu said, "Listen, Sahadalala, there was once a Champaka forest at this beautiful place, which is a portion of Kadirvan of Vrindavan. Champakalata Shaki takes Champaka flowers, strings garlands, and offers them to Radha and Krishna as her eternal pastime. When Kali Yuga grew in influence, capitalists moved here and eagerly took the flowers. They set up a hatha or market and sold the Champaka flowers to the villagers and townsfolk.
Therefore, this enchanting place is called Champakahata, or more commonly, Champahati. When Lakshmana Sen was the king of Nadia, Jayadev was one of his subjects in Navadvipa. He built a hut on the bank of Balal Dirghi and peacefully lived there with his wife Padma. He wrote the Dasavatar poem there, which came into the king's hand. The king read the poem with great relish and inquired who had written it. Govardhanacharya told the king the great poet Jayadev had written it. The king asked where he lived, and Govardhan told him, Jayadev stays in Navadvipa. Hearing this, the king secretly searched and arrived in the night at Jayadev's house. The king entered the cottage, dressed as a Vaishnava, and after offering respects to the poet, seated himself. Jayadev, however, knew he was the king dressed as a penniless Vaishnava. The king soon introduced himself and begged the poet to come to his palace. Jayadev, being very detached from materialism, could not agree to go to the house of a materialist. He answered the king, I will give up your kingdom and go elsewhere. Association with materialists is not auspicious. I will cross the Ganges and go to Nilachala Jagannath Puri. The king said, listen to me, Prabhu. You should never leave Navadvipa. Your words should remain true, but my wish should also be fulfilled. O Prabhu, kindly do what you must in such a way that I may also be favoured. Across the Ganges is the enchanting Champahata. Stay there for a few years. I will not go there as I please, but I may seek your lotus feet only when you desire. Hearing the king's words, the great poet agreed and immediately replied, though you are endowed with so much wealth and such a kingdom, you are a devotee of Krishna and not bound to the material world. I called you a materialist to test you, but you have tolerated it. So that's the test of the devotee, tolerance and humility. That's how we see devotees, and that they will tolerate all difficulties and always remain just a humble devotee. Guru Kishore Das Babaji, he used to test devotees in a very simple way. He would ask them to sing the Sri Guru Vandana prayers to the Guru, and he would listen. You know, he would hear how nicely they want to surrender to Guru. And if they're just doing some musical, embellishments, and there's no mood of, surrender to Guru, then you go away. So hearing the king's words, the great poet agreed and immediately replied, though you are endowed with so much wealth and such a kingdom, you are a devotee of Krishna and not bound to the material world. I called you materialist to test you, but you have tolerated it. Thus I know you are a great devotee, a devotee of Krishna. Though accepting material things, you remain unattached. I will remain some time in Champahata, and you will come secretly, giving up your opulent position. The king very happily had his ministers build Jayadev a cottage in Champahata. Jayadev stayed there for some time and worshipped Krishna according to the process of Raghavana. Padmavati, his wife, would bring heaps of champaka flowers which Jayadev would offer to Krishna. In great love, the poet worshipped Krishna, who then appeared before Jayadev with a complexion the colour of the champaka flower, resplendent with the radiance of molten gold. The shining beauty of a million moons would have been put to shame by his beautiful face. He had curly hair and a garland of flowers around his neck. His arms were long and his effulgence illumined the room. Seeing that form of Gauranga, Jayadev fainted with tears streaming from his eyes, while Padmavati also fell to the earth unconscious. The up with his two lowest hands and spoke Nectarian words. Both of you are my exalted devotees. Therefore, I desire to give you my darshan. Very soon, I will take birth in Nadia in the womb of Sachi. With all the devotees of all the avatars, I will distribute the gift of prema and Krishna Kirtan. After 24 years, I will take sannyas and live in Nilachala. There, in the association of the devotees and overcome with prema, I will continuously taste the pavams of your Gita Govinda, for it is very dear to me. You will return to this Navadvipa Dham after death. This I say for certain. Now both of you go to Nilachala, where you will attain love of God by worshipping Lord Jagannath. After speaking, Gauranga disappeared and they both fainted in separation. When they recovered, they began to weep profusely. While weeping, they humbly stated, "What a form we have seen! How can we live in his absence? Why did the Lord order us to leave Nadia? We must have committed some offence here. This Navadvipa Dham is fully spiritual. Just to think about leaving, we are becoming disturbed. It would have been better to be a bird or a beast in Navadvipa, for then we could stay a long time and always meditate on the Dham. We can give up living, but we cannot give up Navadvipa, for the attachment is too deep. O Lord Gauranga, give us your mercy, give us shelter at your lotus feet, so we may stay here." As they were crying, they heard a voice say, "Do not be sorrowful, but go to Nilachala. There are two things to keep your heart undisturbed. Some time before, you were both thinking of going to stay in Nilachala for a while. The Lord had to fulfill that wish. Lord Jagannath is eager for your darshan. By pleasing him on leaving your body, you will again come to Navadvipa and remain here eternally." Hearing that, the two immediately left. While going, they turned back and glanced once more at Navadvipa. As they went, tears flowed from their eyes, and in distress they spoke to the residents of Navadvipa, "Please bestow your mercy upon us. We are offenders. Please purify us." You see the nature of that. Even though he's written such elevated Gita Govinda, which the Lord has told him, "I will personally relish," and that Lord Jagannath is waiting for your darshan, he's still, you know, in the mood, and just a humble. Actually, the association of the Lord should humble one. You know, when a great personality gives you some mercy, you feel humbled. Like that. That's the reaction of a purified heart. As they proceeded further on, they repeatedly looked back at Navadvipa, which shines like an eight-petaled lotus. After going some distance, Navadvipa is no longer visible, and they crossed out of Gaurabhumi, weeping as they went. Arriving at Nilachala some days later, they were pleased to have darshan of Lord Jagannath. "O Jiva, this is the place of Jayadeva." So he's pointing that place in Navadvipa. "Only a raised portion of earth remains, and this is the story the old people tell." Seeing Jayadeva's place, Jiva began weeping as he rolled on the ground in ecstatic love. Fortunate are Jayadeva and Padmavati, and glorious is Gita Govinda and their attachment to Krishna. "Be merciful to me and give me one drop of the ocean prema that Jayadeva enjoyed." That should be our prayer today. If we could actually have one drop of that love that was enjoyed by Jayadeva Goswami, that one drop defeats all of the happiness of the material world forever. "Be merciful to me and give me one drop of the ocean prema that Jayadeva enjoyed." Saying this, Jiva fell to the ground and rolled in the dust of Nityananda's feet. That night they stayed in Vananath's house, where Vananath and his family attended to Nityananda Prabhu. Aspiring to the shade of the lotus feet of Nittai and Janava, this vile, worthless one sings this glorification of Nadia. So that's back to Vananda Kaur also. Says this vile worthless great personality. This is a symptom. And this is what Lord Chaitanya see the devotee just always remain in a, you know, just a humble devotee, it's very attractive to the Supreme Lord. And he knows that if you remain a humble devotee, you're always protected from Maya. So, any questions or comments? That is because we heard the glories of Jayadeva because Swami and the glories of Narada Muni. Any other questions? Something sensible this time?